Radical love, lavish generosity, extravagant forgiveness, inclusive hospitality, compassionate action, selfless service, a passion for justice, creative nonviolence, simple living. Good day, good people. I'm Robert Farrell. This is Coalesce. Thank you for joining me. Coalesce is grounded in both and thinking, heart wisdom, and listening for the common good arising in dialogue, where we are present to presence. Coalesce provides an opportunity to encounter and discover the multiple perspectives that make our beautiful community. May we see with the eyes of our heart. May we love one another with peace and compassion. May all beings come to know the divine presence within. This is episode 21, The Spirituality of Subtraction. As I've journeyed through my spiritual path, I became aware of St. Francis and recognized that he was living and teaching much of what I was experiencing. Reflecting on his spiritual life helps me reflect on my spiritual life. Even though I was a Protestant and he was a Catholic, I connect with the spirituality reflected by his life, as well as Claire Bonaventure and John Duns Scotus. It became easier and easier not to see him as a Catholic, or me as a Protestant, but as a spiritual being deeply growing as a human being. I hope you will learn from this simple, joyful spirituality. One day, Brother Masio approached Brother Francis and asked him with complete sincerity, "Why after you? Why after you? Why does the whole world come running after you, Francis?" We are still asking that question 8 centuries later. Francis is what some call a prime attractor, one who moves history and humanity forward just by being who he is. Francis, who died in 1226, has a longer bibliography in the Library of Congress than any person in history. He is taken seriously by all world religions. When Pope John Paul II wanted to gather the leaders of all world religions to have a respectful interfaith dialogue in the 1980s, the only city in the world that they could agree to meet in was Assisi, because the memory of Saint Francis doesn't carry any negative baggage, even to other religions. The first Franciscans to arrive in America was in 1598 in New Mexico, and it was the beginning of a long and checkered history. I'm afraid the order had lost much of Francis' luster by then, because like the church itself, we had aligned ourselves with power, war, and empire. In our case, the Spanish Empire for protection. Strange, since this is precisely what Francis refused to do in order to keep his structural, gospel, and personal freedom. But at least the Franciscans still accompanied the poor and the immigrants and had not lost Francis's sense of adventure into ever new worlds. The world of Francis is a much larger world where sun, moon, animals, plants, and elements are all shown reverence, and even personal subjectivity as brother and sister. He is the patron saint of ecology, animals, and peacemaking because he understood that the entire circle of life has a great lover at the center of all of it. He is the only Christian man ever known to attempt 3 trips to dialogue with the enemy during the tragic crusades against Muslims in the Holy Land, telling the Christians they were wrong for being there. He is truly a universal man, addressing the same issues that are still urgent and important in our time. A reflection, inferior parts. Meister Eckhart rightly pointed out that spirituality has much more to do with subtraction than it does with addition. I'm sad to say that most spirituality in the West has largely become a matter of addition. This spiritual consumerism focuses on learning more spiritual ideas, earning merit badges from God, trying to attain enlightenment, and the willpower of heroic moral behavior. Yet the counterintuitive nature of this Jesus journey shows it is not all about getting, attaining, achieving, performing, or succeeding, all of which tend to pander to the ego. Jesus' spirituality is much more about letting go of what we do not need anyway. It more often involves unlearning than learning. Jesus taught us the way of descent, which we later called the way of the cross. Like few other Christians, Francis profoundly understood such a major turnaround. He wanted God, not his ego, to steer his life, so he practiced letting go of his own will, his own needs, and his own preferences until he was free of the domination and able to find happiness at a much deeper and more truthful level. Much of Francis's universal appeal is that he took a joyful approach to inner and outer liberation. His entire lifestyle was a wholesale critique of the way most people live. Yet he didn't do this in a negative or moralistic way. After spending time as a prisoner of war when he was very young, Francis seemed to realize the intrinsic connection between violence and our preoccupation with money, possessions, and empty status symbols. He felt the only way to get out of the world of violence, competition, and hatred was to live a simple life. A life that did not appropriate anything to itself, but a life lived in constant presence to what was right in front of him, which was nature itself, an always present doorway to the divine. Seeing what was right in front of him also awakened Francis to the immense amount of suffering in the world. Francis did not shield himself from that suffering or deny the dark, negative side of himself and the world. Instead, he did a preemptive dive right into the tears of things, without judgment, rancor, or cynicism. For Francis, death belonged to life. Death did not threaten life. And so he freely chose what most of us run from, poverty, failure, humiliation, and the search for human respect. He first worked with the lepers on the plain below Assisi, and there, as he says, he found what was once hateful to me became sweetness and life. We all learn the mystery of ourselves at the price of our own innocence. Francis didn't try to remain innocent. The word means unwounded. He did not run from life's wounding, because he saw that in Jesus it became the way to resurrection and universal life. There are two major approaches to spirituality and conversion. We can try to exclude and triumph over the negative parts, the shadow parts, the inferior parts, 1 Corinthians 12:22. This leads us to a kind of heroic spirituality based on willpower and the achievement of some sort of supposed perfection. But if you are honest, what you are really doing is pretending and excluding the dark side that you do not want to look at, or the people you do not want to deal with. The way of Francis included and integrated the negative, forgiving and accepting the imperfection and woundedness of life. He agreed with Paul that the supposed inferior or weakest are, in fact, the most indispensable. Let us take this moment to connect with the imperfection and woundedness of life. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. A reflection, the marrow of the gospel. Many people that are followers of Francis, even though they're not officially Franciscans, have discovered again and again what can only be called radical simplification. I think of people like Thérèse of Lisieux, Charles de Foucauld, Dorothy Day, Vincent de Paul, Serapha Masarov, thousands of Catholic and Protestant missionaries, Mother Teresa, and most recently Pope Francis. The way of Francis of Assisi cannot be contained inside a formal Franciscanism simply because it is nothing more than the gospel itself, in a very distilled and honest form. Francis says it this way: the rule and the life of the Friars Minor is simply to live the gospel. In fact, the first rule that he ever wrote in 1221 is simply a stringing together of a whole bunch of quotes from the New Testament. He sent it off to Rome, and the Pope looked at it and said, in effect, "This is no rule of life. This is just the gospel." I can just hear Francis saying, "Yes, that's the point. It is just the gospel. We don't need any other rule except the gospel." In his testament, he says Franciscanism is nothing other than the marrow of the gospel. He said our life is simply to live the gospel, to get to the core of what Jesus taught. Honestly, the core of the gospel is so simple that it's hard to live. It's so clear that the mind almost insists on making it complicated, doctrinal, and abstract, so we can argue about it. Even Francis had to add some niceties to his rule to make it more acceptable to the Roman system before it could be approved in 1223. He added politically correct things such as, "Be sure you are nice to the priest and always respect the bishop." And wouldn't you know it, this little ragtag group of Italian laymen were officially approved by the church, when many others who were doing the same thing, like the Waldensians and the poor men of Lyons, were not. Humility goes a long way when you are trying to reform something. Francis had a sincerity and joy about him which made him easy to trust and even like. If we are to believe the responses of the Sultan in Egypt, who had nothing to gain, Pope Innocent III in Rome, who had achieved the height of papal and temporal power, and the local bishop in Assisi, who had the most to lose, perhaps. Apparently it was pretty hard to dislike this guy. A reflection. Bring out things both old and new. Francis was at once very traditional and entirely new in the ways of holiness, and he is still such a standing paradox. He stood barefoot on the earth and yet touched the heavens. He was grounded in the church and moved instinctively towards the cosmos. He lived happily inside the visible, and yet both suffered and rejoiced in what others thought was invisible. Again and again, he was totally at home in two worlds at the same time, and thus he made them into one world. Francis, like all saints, delighted in both his absolute littleness and his absolute connection in the very same moment, knowing they depended on one another. Francis and Claire, his friends and followers, died into the life that they loved instead of living in fear of any death that could end their life. They were both so very eager to love, and they somehow knew that dying to the old and unneeded was an essential part of living this love at any depth. Most of us do not seem to know that, and we resist all change. Jesus himself, Paul, Jesus's iconoclastic interpreter, and both Francis and Claire made room for the new by a full willingness to let go of the old. This is quite a rare pattern in the history of formal religion, which is too often a love affair with small and comfortable traditions. Each of these game-changing people had the courage and the clarity to sort out what was perennial wisdom from what was unreal, passing, merely cultural, or even destructive, which is exactly how Jesus describes the way a disciple of the kingdom behaves. He says that such disciples are householders who bring out from their household things both old and new. Matthew 13:52. John the Baptist describes Jesus as a winnowing fan within religion itself that separates the grain from the chaff. Matthew 3:12. Instead of presuming that religion is all grain and the outsiders are all chaff, let us take this moment to connect to both old and new. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. A reflection, divine intimacy. Both Jesus and Francis did not let the old get in the way of the new, but like all religious geniuses, revealed what the old was saying all along. I find much wisdom in what the contemporary faith seeker and poet Christian Wiman writes. Faith itself sometimes needs to be stripped of its social and historical incrustations and returned to its first churchless incarnation in the human heart. Francis both named and exemplified that first churchless incarnation of faith in the human heart, but then he somehow also knew that it was the half-knowing organized church that passed this shared mystery on to him and preserved it for future generations. He had the humility and patience to know that whatever is true is always a shared truth, and only institutions, for all their weaknesses, make this widely shareable, historical, and communal. Francis understood the humility, kenosis, and the patience of incarnation. Even a little bit of the truth is more than enough for a saint. Precisely because both Jesus and Francis were conservatives in the true sense of the term, they conserved what was worth conserving, the core, the transformative life of the gospel, and did not let accidentals get in the way, which are the very things false conservatives usually idolize. They then ended up looking quite progressive, radical, and even dangerous to the status quo. This is, of course, the constant and consistent biblical pattern from Abraham to Moses to Jeremiah to Job to John the Baptist to Mary and Joseph. With courage and wisdom, great seers invariably end up saying something like Jesus did. The law says, and I also say. Matthew 5:20 through 48. Francis's holiness, like all holiness, was unique and never a copy or mere imitation. In his testament, he says, "No one told me what I ought to do." And then at the very end of his life, he says, "I have done what was mine to do. Now you must do what is yours to do." What permission, freedom, and space he thus gave to his followers. Bonaventure echoed that understanding of unique and intimate vocation when he taught, "We are each loved by God in a particular and incomparable way, as in the case of a bride and bridegroom." Francis and Claire knew that the love God has for each soul is unique and made to order, which is why any saved person always feels beloved, chosen, and even God's favorite, like so many in the Bible. Divine intimacy is always and precisely particular and made to order, and thus intimate. A reflection, true center. The biblical prophets, by definition, were seers and seekers of eternal mystery, which always seems dangerously new and heretical to old eyes and any current preoccupations with security. The prophets lived on the edge of the inside of Judaism. John the Baptist does the same with Temple Judaism, and Paul then sharply disagrees with Peter in the new Christian establishment in Jerusalem, Galatians 2, 1-14. Francis and Claire continued this classic pattern in their own hometown as they physically moved from Upper Assisi among the majores, the upper class, to the lower side of town and the minores, the poor and lower class. There they had nothing to prove or defend, and they gained opportunities to have fresh and honest experience and to find their true center. It is ironic that you must go to the edge to find the center, but that is what the prophets, hermits, and mystics invariably know. Only there were they able to live in a way that was not grasping at the superficial or protecting the surface of things, but falling into the core and center of their own souls and their own experiences. Francis and Claire can show you how to die into your one and only life, the life that you must learn to love. It will show itself to be one continuous movement. First, learning to love your life, and then allowing yourself to fully die into it, and never to die away from it. Once death is joyfully incorporated into life, you are already in heaven, and there is no possibility or fear of hell. That is the Franciscan way. The gospel is not a fire insurance policy for the next world, but a life assurance policy for this world. Francis and Claire somehow came to see through the common disguises of heaven and hell, and they seemed to come to this on their own. My hope and desire in this episode is that you can know heaven on your own too, and now. Let us take this moment to connect to true center. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. The practice this week is titled The Franciscan Calling. Francis didn't wish for himself or for his followers to be priests, to take higher positions on the church's hierarchical ladder of education, prestige, and power. Francis was apparently ordained a deacon, but only under pressure, because he never talks about it. The mark of a true Franciscan heart is devotion to the gospel, regardless of title, group, or official status. I'd like to share with you 8 hallmarks of the secular Franciscan order that come from the manual titled For Up to Now. These can be claimed and practiced by anyone. Simplicity. There is no pretense in the Franciscan spirituality. We who live by the rule of St. Francis strive to be the genuine article, that is, people who do not care much for fame or wealth, people who live in simplicity. Poverty. Love of gospel poverty develops confidence in the Father and creates internal freedom. Humility. The truth of what and who we really are in the eyes of God. Freedom from pride and arrogance. A genuine sense of minority. The recognition that we are servants, not superior to anyone. A complete and active abandonment to God, trusting in God's unconditional love. Conversion. Daily we begin again the process of changing to be more like Jesus. Transformation. What God does for us when we are open and willing. Peacemaking. We are messengers of peace as Francis was. This week, I hope you will reread these qualities of a Franciscan and discern if you are called to live in such a way, making the gospel the very core of your day-to-day doings and being. What is yours to do? Thank you for being with me. May the sun bring you new energy by day. May the moon softly restore you by night. May the rain wash away your worries. May the breeze blow new strength into your being. May you walk gently through the world and know its beauty all the days of your life. Blessings to all.